Hope you guys are all doing nicely. We're certainly it's been a nice week, and let's try and understand what we're talking about today. Last time we've been trying to learn the Torah of the Chasam Sofer, and we're trying to do it topically also. And last week we spoke about one of the ideas which is most associated with Chasam Sofer, which is that line which he took from the Mishnah and Orla, the Gemara and Kiddushin of Chadash Asa Min HaTorah, and applying that when new movements come about and suddenly there are those that want to make changes in various areas, the response is not to give in, but the response is to hold a line. And the holding a line, Chadash Min HaTorah, and we spoke last week about how one of the examples we gave was even something which seems to us as innocuous as where you're going to build the bima inside a shul, but for Chasam Sofer became much more than that. For Chasam Sofer became, you know, and it became much more a shift indicative of a larger transition that people were trying to make. Akdei Kach, as Moshe writes, that there were some that had the minhag from Hungary not even to daven in the shul, that the bima wasn't in the middle of the shul, and that was a particular orientation of the Chasam Sofer. We're speaking today about a different perspective that comes from Rav Kook. To my knowledge, I'm not an expert in writing Rav Kook. To my knowledge, Rav Kook never explicitly writes about his relationship to Chasam Sofer, his Chadash Asa Min HaTorah. But I want to try to describe at least what I understand to be Rav Kook's perspective on the topic as a whole, and I want to be machtimit with a couple of things. Rav Kook is the most dominant thinker relevant to the Tzioni world here in Eretz Yisrael. Most of us, certainly me, I was not brought up on the Torah of Rav Kook at all. It was not a Torah which I was familiar with. I didn't hear it from my Rebbeim, really. I think almost at all, the Torah of Kook, maybe a comment here or a comment there. But it wasn't what I was brought up on. And I say that as someone that was brought up with a wide range of, a decently wide range of exposure to the world of Sfarim and the world of Jewish thinkers. But Rav Kook never really made it through. And Rav Kook's impact is in many ways most intensely felt, certainly in the Tzioni world in Eretz Yisrael. The only other two groups, I think, and I could be off on this, that have really tapped into the Torah of Rav Kook, academics have been very much fascinated by the Torah of Rav Kook. If you go to universities, you can take classes in the thought of Rav Kook. As a Tzioni world, so you have some who are a little bit more mystically inclined, the world of Moshe Weinberger and the like, that have taught the Torah of Rav Kook, and we'll understand what the pull is in a little bit. But Rav Kook is not outside of the Dati Leumi world, elements of the modern world in America, but not even so much, more of a line here or a line there. But Rav Kook's Torah is a very, very powerful Torah, and a Torah that is learned and undoubtedly, I think, exceptionally relevant. We had this chus of, the year before I made Aliyah, so my goal was to understand this Tzibor as well as possible. We'd spent a lot of time, so I couldn't meet people, I was living in America, but to learn some of the Sfarim of the Talmidim of Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook, Rav Kook's son, to be able to familiarize myself with what the scene looks like here. And since we've come to try to learn a little bit more of the Torah of Kook, it is not everything for me. It is not the basis of a Mesorah, but it's something which, on the one hand, is very, very powerful, and there are insights that come across that Rav Kook has had that have been very, very moving. And the more you learn Rav Kook, and today's not a bad example of it, you'll also, at times, understand two additional things, which is why Rav Kook was controversial, things he said that were a little bit, that were original in a certain sense, and we'll understand the challenge of applying Rav Kook to nowadays. Passed away, I don't know, 80-something years ago, I would guess, and you know, applying it, you'll see a little bit of a range, a little bit of a range of issues, even in the world that is most dominated by the thought and by the Torah of Rav Kook. I'm going to give two examples that were in the news this week. If we're talking about Chadash Asa Min HaTorah and Chasam Sofer, new movements, how do you relate to them? How are you accommodating? Are you holding a line? Is it a Chadash Asa Min HaTorah? Are you open to change and things like that? So two things that happened this week. These are hot topics. They could easily be shiurim that we'll do on a Monday night, and maybe we will. The first was Rabbi Benny Lau, who's a well-known Rav in Eretz Yisrael, wrote a bunch of Sfarim, some on Chumash, some on Jewish history, some on Tanakh, an interesting person, who wrote a pamphlet or a work relevant to the LGBT scene, trying to speak about how we could do things in the Orthodox community to be more accommodating, in order to welcome a little bit, to in many ways be open to the Chadash, not with removing and destroying all that's there, but a very non-certainly Chasam Sofer-oriented type of an approach. Within the Dati Lumi world, there was a letter that came out this week. It was a letter signed by many of the elder statesmen, many of the elder Rabbanim in the Dati Lumi world that was nothing if not incredibly, incredibly ferocious. Rabbeinu Rav Tiyahuda of Cook's son, taught us that when it comes to Chil Hashem, so it's important to be Mekadeh Shem Shemayim even more. That pamphlet that was written by a particular rabbi, didn't even say his name, Kedivrei Ploni, Rav Kehila B'Mirushalayim, that was a Chil Hashem that he wrote to accommodate in certain ways. And it's Margishim Chov L'Kadeh Shem Hashem V'Limchos Al Hadvarim. We have to protest, not to be as accommodating, but what he did was not okay. He gave over a degree of he was legitimizing what they were doing, which is not okay. And we have to fight back a little bit. What can we do? He ratzon sheyashuv b'tshuva shleima. We could daven that he does full tshuva, but that's what it is. And in many ways, both of these, of the sides there, are drawing in a certain sense on the world of Rav Kook. And it's important to sort of process things a bit. Another issue which came up is with a name and that I think is a very well-known name, if not the name certainly is Sfarim, Rabbi Elazar Melamed, the author of Pini Halacha, immensely popular Sfarim. If you look around in many Batei Medrash, certainly in this Tibor, you find a lot of the copies of Pini Halacha. They're translating into English. So he's actually not really on the left so much of the Dati Lumi world. He has, you know, a long beard, wears a hat, looks like a little bit of even like a different kind of a scene. But he had a meeting on Zoom, a conversation, which he had with a female Reform rabbi. And he was killed for this. You know, in the Dati Lumi world, Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef, Sfari Chief Rabbi, wrote something, Kol Gadol Yisrael, don't do this, it's ridiculous. How could you possibly give them any form of legitimization? Rabbi Elazar Melamed responded, I didn't legitimize anything. I had a conversation. Questions come up. I want to understand Klal Yisrael. I want to understand people. I'm not sure why I've put them in Cheirim or things like that. It's not the way. And in many ways, also, you had within Talmidim of Rav Kook, different sides on those kinds of an issue. You presumably would not really have that when it comes to the Chasam Sofer. I don't think, to my knowledge, people with a straight face could claim that the Chasam Sofer would be on of these questions. Yeah, he would be meeting the Reform, you know, in that kind of... I don't think you get that impression. The impression you get from the Chasam Sofer, and certainly from many of his Talmidim, at least from many of his Talmidim, Maram Shik and others, is that he was much more of a strong Chadash Asam and HaTorah kind of a person. So I want to understand Rav Kook's approach. I want to try to highlight what I understand to be some of the tension in Rav Kook's Mahalath. And it's going to be something which I think is very powerful. And we're going to try to understand where it comes from, at least that's how I understand it, the implications of it, and where it didn't go. There's a line in one of Rav Kook's letters that Rav Kook did not write in a systematic way. He didn't say, like, here's Perek Aleph of my thought, Perek Beis of my thought. He wrote in journals, and his journals got published, there were letters that got published. The Sfarim we have, like Oros HaTorah, his pieces on Torah, were lifted from his journals, from his Talmidim, to sort of take all the things he wrote about Torah and put them into one work. He wasn't, like, the most organized thinker. The Nazir, one of his great Talmidim, Rav David Cohn, the Nazir, I believe, asked Rav Kook, like, okay, I'm pulled to some of your Torah, but none of it seems systematic, organized, or actually comprehensive. It seems like it's like all over the place a little bit. So Rav Kook, like, do you even have that or no? You know, like, do you have a systematic thought? Or is it just like whatever you're feeling, you write down? Like, there are poets like that. If you're trying to think of the systematic thought of a songwriter, so Lav Dafka isn't always systematic. It's that whatever was hitting them at that particular moment. So if Kook said, yes, my thought can be organized well, I'm not so good at it. It's not how I work. But there is a certain system taking place here. So Rav Kook, if you had to speak about one Torah, one line even, which is like the line maybe that is the most dominant, or the line that would best encapsulate the Torah of Kook. So there are those who claim that for Tzvi Yehuda Kook, it would be a line about Eretz Yisrael, probably. There are those that claim that for Amital from Gush, Amital's father, that would be a line about Musar, about human morality. This is a line which I think has to be up there as far as his most famous lines, the one most relevant to our sugya undoubtedly, and the one that may be most dominant for his thought. Hayashan yitchadesh v'chadash yitchadesh. The old is going to be made new, and the new is going to be sanctified. The new is going to be holy. That is not chadash aser min ha-Torah at all. Hayashan yitchadesh, take the old and make it new. Va'chadash, and that which is new, yitkadesh. Try to make that holy. Now there's a lot of pieces here to unravel if you want to really sort of break it down a little bit. Hayashan yitkadesh, Rav Kook is not arguing for throwing out the old. He's not saying that that which was old we should get rid of. That is an approach which is maybe more associated with Reform, time of Chasam Sofer, you know, until this day. But Hayashan, it's not about getting rid of a lot of the old things. It's about taking old things and being able to be mechadesh them. Taking old things and being able to make them a little bit new. And taking that which is new, and instead of taking that which is new and saying it's usher, but achadash, that which is new, is yiskadesh, is a way of sanctifying it. We have not seen a practical machlokes between Rav Kook and the Chasam Sofer, but undoubtedly it's a different orientation when you're looking at things. So what are you going to see? A new thing comes up, so where's the difference? Where's the difference going to come from? What leads Rav Kook to have a different approach to the world of new? So here's something which is actually, I think, fascinating. It's one of the reasons why, Ladati, Rav Kook is never going to be that popular, Aliba de MS, or at least can't be right now, as popular in certain scenes. Rav Kook's worldview in many ways is based on Kabbalah. The way he views the world based on Kabbalah. He doesn't write always in Kabbalistic terms. He doesn't quote sources that much in his writings. But he's writing ideas based on Kabbalah. What is the Kabbalah in many ways which is leading Rav Kook in a particular place? So I'll summarize for you a passage in an amazing sefer of his called Midot HaRa'aya. He speaks about a particular midos. One of the midos he speaks about, which is not a classic midah like for the Balei Musar in there, is Ha'alas Nitzotzos, raising up the sparks, raising up the sparks. What does that mean? So this is, I'm not a Kabbalist at all, but I'll give you my 15-second, overview of all of Kabbalah, right now. It's easy to do because you can essentially exhaust your knowledge in those 15 seconds, which is, according to the Arizal, it's one of the dominant elements of Torah Sa'ari, there are holy sparks, Nitzotzos, that are spread throughout the world. When in creation that happened, and part of our goal, this means like literally sparks, means that there are whole pieces of holiness found in different parts of the world, and our goal is to be able to use those for kedusha, to discover the good which is in them. That's why, like, Derech Agav is a very fascinating shla. The shla says if there's bittel on a piece of meat, the Bnei Yisrael code, if there's bittel on a piece of meat, two kosher, one not kosher, so now you dafka should not be machmir to not eat the meat at all. You shouldn't say, I don't know, when it's not kosher, I don't want to eat it. You should dafka rely on bittel. Because the fact that there is bittel tells us that normally there aren't really nitzotzos there. There aren't really sparks in that food that need to be elevated. But if there's bittel, that's a sign that the hashkacha of the Ribono Shel Olam caused it. That piece of non-kosher meat was made to be made kosher through bittel. That piece of meat, mistama, there must have been a little bit of a spark of kedusha in there. And the goal of us eating that meat and making a bracha, we make a bracha, eat that meat for holy reasons, we're upping a certain kind of kedusha which is there. This is one of the theories also, again, sharing at least as I understand it, why Klal Yisrael throughout Galus keeps on going from one land to another land, one land to another land, without really going back so much to the same places in a dominant kind of a way. Klal Yisrael is here, and in that particular place, they were ma'ala the nitzotos, that they took out the good things that were there. When there was no longer anything that was kadosh in that place the same way, I think some of the Mekubalim explain it this way, so then it's time to move on. And then we go to a different place. When Eastern Europe is in many ways, elements of Eastern Europe are the nitzotos are uplifted and taken out, so that then it's over, and then we move on to America. That's a theory out there which is part of what's causing, is not explaining everything, but part of what causes certain things is that shift. And when the nitzotos from all around are picked up, so then that's part of what allows us to have a certain kind of geula. That's at least elements of what some suggest. For Rav Kook, there are two things which are important to know. Number one, in the world of nitzotos, Rav Kook writes, like, everything in this world has something holy in it. There's something holy in it. Doesn't mean that it can't be predominantly bad. Doesn't mean that there can't be many things which are terrible. But everything in this world, there is something good. Bechol pe'ula, every action which is done, every food, every movement. There's always, at least 99.9% of the time, there is something kadosh within it. Something kadosh within it, which means that when Rav Kook is going to be looking at a world, the world that Rav Kook is going to see is going to be a world in which things can be predominantly bad, but everything has an element of kedusha, and that piece of kedusha is a piece of kedusha which we're supposed to try to sort of use, find, and elevate. Use, find, and elevate. Related to that point is what I believe is an additional piece in the Torah of Rav Kook, which is, well, speaking about Ors HaKodesh in a second, there in the Sheikah, it would really be the fifth source, but it's in between sources 4 and 6, 5, I don't know why, which is that the world is also progressing and moving in a good direction. Many of us know, the Gemara in Brachos and Daf Lamed Hey, and other places also, that there's a concept of Yuridas Hadoros, the decline of generations. For a cook, that's true in a certain sense and not true in a different sense. It's true as far as, you know, figures. We have no one like Moshe Rabbeinu alive nowadays. We have no one like the Gra, like the Netziv, like the Baal Shem around nowadays. They pick your tzaddik. But says Rav Kook, the world as a whole is moving in a good direction. Morality, a certain kind of progress which is taking place. The world's becoming more moral. It's moving in a certain direction. The example, which I think some academics give, if you're into this kind of a thing, how do we see the world is becoming a little bit more moral, is the way that we relate to sexual abusers. That 200 years ago, people didn't really appreciate what was so terrible about those things. You know, wasn't dealt with a certain kind of harshness. But the world has moved to a place where we can't, you know, handle that at all. For Rav Kook, this relates to both of these Torahs. The way that Rav Kook relates to lots of new movements. Look at Oros HaKodesh there in Chelek Beis. Rav Kook there is speaking about evolution. So evolution is an idea that for many Jews, many Balei Halacha, many great Balei Machshava, is the antithesis of an authentic Jewish approach to things. No, we don't come from animals. The Ribbono Shel Olam created us. That's part of what you find in Sefer Bereishis. And the idea of evolution is in and of itself an idea which is absolutely ridiculous. I think it's something that Balei Musar said. I think had Darwin seen Rabbi Shlomo Salanter, he never could have believed in evolution, because had he seen godless Adam like that, he never could have thought that we came from animals. You know, something along those kinds of lines. And there are, you know, the Babbage Rebbe spoke about evolution. A lot who were, some didn't care about evolution. Some people in general are not bothered by scientific questions. I'm not goreish that world. And some are goreish that world, and some have to deal with it. For Rav Kook, you know, Torah hit patchut, the Torah of things sort of like opening, the Torah of evolution, is how lechaz v'kveshes ha'olam ka'es. It's taking over the world right now, the world of evolution. He says on some level, say what you want about it actually being true, but on some level, he mat emes l'raze olam shal kabbalah. There are elements of evolution, a theory as many thought was terrible, which was filled with heresy. But Rav Kook says, actually, is tapping into a Kabbalistic idea, yoser mikol ha'toros ha'filosofios acheros. More than any of the philosophical theories that are out there, there's something that's really deep there, which is an emotzim boas a inyan ha'eloki moed divine role taking place here. Beholahoti ha'poa mashu ain sof bekoach, that the world as a whole havaya kula mispatachas va'ola, that things are starting to move and things are progressing, and evolution understood that there's a certain movement in this world. And for Rav Kook, based on Kabbalistic sources, so new movements, what that means in a certain sense, things are moving in a good direction, and things are really good, and things can really be positive, and things can really be very, very holy. Things can be very, 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 very holy. There's something very powerful about that. For Rav Kook, as far as Torah HaKabbalah goes, so there's a certain kind of a particular read which he had. Coupled with that, not only is Rav Kook open to the new for Kabbalistic reasons, in the sense that, you know, the world is progressing, everything has a holy spark in it, everything has a little bit of good, there's another element of Rav Kook's Torah which is incredibly intriguing. I don't have the sefer here. The sefer called Avas Tzedek. Avas Tzedek, some of you may be familiar, they're the Torah of Rav Tzedek Cohen of Lublin. So there, the Maharal, in this particular Torah, the Maharal and Netzach Yisrael, there's a comment of the Torah of Tzedek. The sefer Avas Tzedek was a sefer put out through Tam Chacham and Beit El, who's put out a lot of the writings of Rav Tzedek. So he's put out Sfarim of Rav Tzedek's Torah. Rav Tzedek Cohen of Lublin, one of the more important Hasidic thinkers, influenced the thought of Rav Huttner and Shach Five Mendelovich, a lot of really giants that were influenced by the Torah of Rav Tzedek, Moshe Shapiro. There's a lot that were influenced by Rav Tzedek. So he wrote a sefer, Avas Tzedek, on the Torah of Rav Kook and Rav Tzedek. The Torah of Kook and Rav Tzedek. Rav Hadari from Shiva Kotel put out a different sefer on that. So this is about Rav Tzedek and Rav Kook, the way that they defend Klal Yisrael. The way they defend Klal Yisrael. They're people that try to see good in Klal Yisrael, and each defend Klal Yisrael. He points out there in the introduction, or page 21 there, he points out that Rav Tzedek spoke in theory of defending Klal Yisrael, he spoke in theory about the depth and the beauty of Jews, you know, wherever they are. Rav Kook was living, because of his time, his personality, whatever it is, really defended Klal Yisrael l'maisa. He defended Klal Yisrael l'maisa, looking at secular Zionists, and understanding how what they were doing was really kadosh. Rav Kook was the ultimate defender of Klal Yisrael. He did so in a really fascinating way. I don't know if people know what the Torahs were saying right now, but if you do, I apologize. If not, it's good to understand elements of the scene. One thing Rav Kook does in the passage in Ein Ayan, in his commentary on Agadata, Masechta Shabbos, is a wild idea. It's a wild idea which I'll try to explain as I understand it. It's from Perek Tes, the end of in Ein Ayan. It's quoted in Rav Tzedek as the following. We've been speaking, and some of us at least, in these Parsha Machshava Shirim on Thursday morning, Wednesday night, whatever it is, on how different avos have particular midos. Avram is chesed, Yitzchak is gvura and din. If we had to suspect which of the avos you would associate with defending Klal Yisrael, with understanding the innate kedusha of Klal Yisrael, most of us probably would have chosen Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu is the ish chesed. Avram's the one which is hachnatas orchem. He's welcoming. He's out there. He's on nefesh asher asu b'charan. He's building gerim, Rashi quotes. He's the one that I would have thought is the one associated with dan lekavs chus, with finding the good in people. Yitzchak, the world of gvura and the world of din, the world of judgment. So Yitzchak, I would have associated with harshness. I would have said the kanayim, though the Chasam Sofer, I would have said, the Chasam Sofer is a Yitzchak Jew. He's a Jew that's fighting. A Jew says Rav Kook, sorry, his understanding that to relate to Jews as being very kadosh, to see things as being kadosh, is rooted not in the midah of Avraham, but in the midah of Yitzchak. That even Yitzchak, it's not a cutesy chesed kind of a thing, but in the world of din, in the world of gvura, in that world, in that scene, you can discover the beauty of Klal Yisrael. How come? So again, this is how I understand it. I'm sorry if I'm saying these things incorrectly. But part of what Yitzchak was about, Avram was all about going out, bringing other people in. Yitzchak, part of Gvura, part of Yitzchak's personality, was Yitzchak stayed internal. He's never going to leave Eretz Yisrael. He's not being Mekari people the same way. Yitzchak is an internally focused kind of a person. But Yitzchak's internal focus is a deep kind of internal focus. He's looking inside, and he's always going to dig as much as possible to the depth of what's really, really there. In that sense, says Rav Kook, you know what Yitzchak was able to do? Yitzchak is the koach to look not at the superficial perspective that defines Klal Yisrael one way, but to look deep, deep, deep down and to be able to see within there the kedusha of a Jew. To be able to see within there the kedusha of a person that there's a certain kind of depth. This idea, ki ativius hamitis, the real nature of a Jew, hatchuna nafsh shel uma, the real soul of Klal Yisrael, hachoderes begniza bechol prata, it's hidden deep down, he be'emes midaso shel Yitzchak. This is the midah of Yitzchak, which can find a certain kind of kedusha there. Derech agav, so I have this chus of davening Friday nights outside Beit Mishpachot, I get to hear of God still on Friday nights. It's an amazing thing. It's awesome. It is true, sometimes hard to hear. The mask wearing and distancing does not make it the simplest. But last week I was positioned in a good place. I heard of Gandhi quoted an awesome Torah last week, very much along these lines. And it's so not timely, so I apologize. It's so timely, sorry, and not our time. Which is a Torah about the Arava. Torah about the Arava. Who's not thinking about Sukkot? I think it's in Rapsutzer, Zerakodesh. Every day of the year, we're so kind of Sukkot. You always learn about Sukkot every day of the year. This is our Kiyum for the Rapsutzer. So they say that, so the Arava we hold up on the last day of Hoshana Rabbah. The last day of Hoshana Rabbah, we hold up the Arava. And many are bothered by that because the Arava is the one that represents, according to Chazal, the Arava has no tam and no reyach, has no taste and no smell. It's associated with Chazal, with the Jew, with no Torah and no Maisim Tovim. Why are we picking up the Arava on the last day? So some of us, you know, a little bit more cynical, would say, no, we're beating the Arava, you know, at the end. Something along those lines, and there's always that chavre, it's like a little bit too into the beating the arava, you know, like you found your mitzvah. So there's something. So Rav Gan said a beautiful pshat. You know why we hold the arava at the end? We hold the arava at the end because Torah and Maisim Tovim are so chashav, they're so important, and the arava always is going to lose to, in a certain sense, the beauty of the esrog, the beauty of the lulav, the bracha we make is on the lulav. You know, it's definitely overshadowed the arava. It's the background to what's there. But it's important for the rabbi to hold up the Arava to say that even a Jew who has no Torah and has no Maisim Tovim, it looks like a Jew, has no Torah, no Maisim Tovim, that's only if you're not learning how to look at it correctly. But a Jew is Kadosh. A Jew is Kadosh. And we're holding up that Arava to say, even though it looks to us like no Torah, and it looks to us like no Maisim Tovim, deep, deep down, there's something which is there, which is very, very kadosh. Deep down there, so we hold it there, Rabbah, to say, this is also kadosh. It's also kadosh, something which is very, very holy there. Beautiful Torah of Gans, according to Sfas Emes. Part of what Rav Kook does then, when Rav Kook looks at new movements, and here is, I think, an amazingly, it's offensive, non-from people find this offensive sometimes, what Rav Kook did. Secular Zionists find this offensive sometimes. But Rav Kook, so he's looking at new movements, and when he looks at new movements, he's going to try to say, Hayashim Yiskadesh, Vachadesh, Yiskadesh, I want to be able to say, or Yitkadesh, if we're speaking, no, Rav Kook spoke in Tzah. So if you're trying to, like, you know, sanctify or raise certain things up. So for Rav Kook, when he looks at movements, so the Chasam Sofer and Rav Kook are doing very, very different things. The Chasam Sofer is saying, I have to hold the line because you're trying to make changes and your changes are going to undermine our Mesorah. And because your changes are so dangerous, even things which may not be halakhically binding the same way, I'm going to fight for, I'm going to hold the line, and I'm never going to welcome. I would never allow that to be the case. I have to fight like crazy. For Rav Kook, when Rav Kook looks at a movement, Rav Kook's first question is, identify what's bad, but also identify where's the Kedusha. And I have to find that Kedusha and in movements that involve. So then I have to really try my best to try to defend, understand, and connect to what they're doing. So maybe I'm going to, I have to still draw the line, that which is usser, but I have to be able to find that good which is there. Rav Kook does, which some find offensive. And here's an amazing thing. I was listening to someone speak once, I think not an Orthodox Jew, speaking about how they can handle the Chasam Sofer, but they can't handle Rav Kook for the following reason. I'm a Reform Jew. I'm a secular Zionist. Secular Zionist. And I say I don't believe in a God. I don't believe in a God. Atheist. I say that I have absolutely no... I'm building Eretz Yisrael, having nothing to do at all with religion. I'm doing it. We need a national homeland. I believe in Jewish culture. But I don't believe at all in anything. So the Chasam Sofer says, okay, I take you at your word. That is what's motivating you. Because it's what's motivating you. So I have to have a certain... I have to hold the line here. I have to hold the line here. You know, I'm not going to... I can't allow certain things. Because you're openly against the Mesorah. I'm not going to welcome you into my tent. I'm not going to identify with you or form partnerships with you or find the Kedusha in what you're doing. You're open about the fact that what you're doing is not good. For Rav Kook, it's a little bit like, you say that you don't believe. You say that what you're doing is not holy. But Gevalt, is it holy? Wow, is it Kadosh? Wow, is it Kadosh? And the guy's like, no. Atheist. You know, and Rav Kook's like, the more you say atheist, the more that's deep down inside. You know? Deep down inside. You're not the Arava, because you have Maisen Tovim. And what you're doing is so great. And Rav Kook, in Maimer Hador, in a piece he wrote about his generation, like what was a couple years ago we had for about a year, Shiurim on Maimer Hador. So Rav Kook in Maimer Hador talks about how, like, you think that you're not religious, because the religion that you saw was so old and so fake that you think that you're motivated by the same values I'm motivated by. It's just leading you to the wrong place because you think what you're looking for isn't our religion, but it is. And the religion that you saw was the Yashan that was never really updated. And it was old and it was stale, but you want to be Kadosh the same way. You want to be Kadosh the same way. So that's like a little bit of a challenge because Rav Kook, on the one hand, at the same time that Rav Kook is finding Kedusha in those that aren't from, and finding Kedusha in new movements, he's doing so by not really taking them at their word. By not really taking them at their word. So I read an article once, I don't know if this is true, like statistically, sociologically, I don't know if it's true on any level, but I think it's a thought-provoking idea. Thought-provoking idea, you can take it or leave it. Undoubtedly, the Haredi world in Eretz Yisrael has been indescribably more successful in Kiruv than the Tzioni world in Eretz Yisrael. The resources that have been invested, the Yeshivish world as a whole, elements of it have been more impactful in the world of Kiruv than the Tzioni world. Tzioni world, I don't think, in my understanding, unless I'm wrong on the scene a little bit, I'm not aware of major institutions of Bali Tshuva the way that, you know, I'm not aware of it the same way. No, the Israeli chevra in the room a little bit. I'm not aware of it the same way. You have a place here, a place there. It's not a dominant thing the way that it is in certain circles. So one of the theories was because a yeshivish guy, if you're a Chasam Sofer Jew, I'll say it not the way it said in the article. If you're a Chasam Sofer Jew and you can have a conversation with him. The Rav Kook guy sometimes, the real Rav Kook guy, there's no conversation to have. You know, the Rav Kook guy, the guy comes in and says, I don't believe, and you say, okay, so let's talk about that. You know, like, I agree that you don't believe, let's talk about it. The Rav Kook guy's like, no, you do. You know, it's like, I don't even know, what's part two of that conversation? You know? What's part two? So obviously it's not to that extent, but in a certain sense, you can negotiate better. You can negotiate better when there's an understanding of where you really are, and we can all agree where you are, what you believe, and that can be the starting point of a conversation. That can be the starting point of a conversation. Okay. Not only the thought of Rav Kook, but some of these lines are famous, but they're famous because they sort of reflect who he is in a certain sense. But for Rav Kook, part of what you have is I think, something else. It's a very famous line here. There's like nine source number ones on the sheet. I'll explain to you why very briefly. My son Ari thought it was a good idea about a year ago to pour a half cup of water on the mouse pad on my computer. So it didn't break anything other than my ability to like right click, which is what you need to do to restart the numbering for the Mikoro. So I have a mouse at home that I use, but I'm sorry I didn't update it, and I apologize. I'm sorry I never went to the computer place to get it fixed. I don't know. Whatever. Cooks as follows. Hatzadikim hatahorim. Einem kol b'mal harisha ela mosifin tzedek. Einem kol b'mal al-kfira ela mosifin emuna. Einem kol b'mal al-be'iris ela mosifin chachma. According to Rav Kook, part of the avodah also is not really to be a fighter, but it's really to be a person that is a builder who adds good into this world, who adds good in this world. A bit of light is docha, a lot of darkness, and our avodah is to add good, but not to really fight bad. Now, taken in extreme, that is the most naive, ridiculous statement in the history of the world. No, sometimes you have to learn how to deal with evil and deal with bad. But for Kook, it's undoubtedly an orientation, which is to try to find good in whatever way you really can. We'll go with one more sort of place where some of these ideas come up, and then I want to speak about the impact of Rav Kook and practically what that meant for Rav Kook, because Chassam Sofer was functioning in a practical world also. So in Olas Re'ia, in Rav Kook's Siddur, he says as follows. It's on the Maimer, it's on a particular Maimer Chazal, it's on source number 3 on the sheet, try to find it. Al Kain. Roy l'chol mi sheyesh lo shaychus shel tshuka l'razi Torah. Anyone that has a connection to the desire for Kabbalah, shehi midas giloi Eliyahu be'eza darga, that wants to have it's almost like a certain element of a revelation of Eliyahu. Afilu mi rat b'derech dimyon or hagasha osaka seicha noshi. Even if you just have like a little bit of a connection, or if you're the kind of Jew that every Motzei Shabbos, that's the time of Eliyahu HaNavi, it's Gemara Maseches Erevin, he can't come on Shabbos, Motzei Shabbos he can come. So even when a person has a certain kind of connection that they want to be able to, you have a very big Jew or things like that. Part of what it means to be a Kabbalist or a mystic in the world of Rav Kook is to find the Zechuyos of Klal Yisrael. V'yakir b'hakara sichlis, understand intellectually very clearly, uvasaga b'hira uvura es kedushas Yisrael, the kedusha of Klal Yisrael. To identify and to see that kedusha, which is present, one of the things which we have to do. Rav Kook's ultimate vision, sorry to go back to the first page, in source number 4, is the end of Maimer Hador. You have an old generation and a new generation. Old generation is from, new generation is super passionate, but secular Zionist. Says Rav Kook, v'leiv ha'avos yaschil lahakir es kol otzeratov v'asegula ha'knusha banim. It's our responsibility, the old Jews, looking at the new ones, who are not keeping, who are not so from, to see the beauty, the splendor found there, be'omek nafshem, deep into their soul. And it's important that the children, v'abanim, yakiruz ha'kedusha v'hatahara, ha'hor v'ateferes ha'maleim b'leiv ha'avos. Each should recognize the beauty of the other, the beauty of the other. They take the good of everybody. As kol anas v'hechsher, shekol elu yavila karen emana, shirak al yedei his chatzis ha his achdus varuchanit shal Yisrael hatzair im Yisrael hazakein tavo Yeshua v'tis machdeuva. According to Rav Kook, the only way that a geula is going to come is when the old Jews look at the new Jews. The new Jews were the ones in his day that weren't keeping Torah mitzvot, that were building Eretz Yisrael, amazing mysterious nefesh for the land, but were open atheists. That in that particular time, Geula is only going to come when we can each learn from the other, and we can build from the other. It's a very different orientation then the Chasam Sofer is Charz Hashem and HaTorah. It's a different orientation. Different orientation. It puts you in a bit of a different place. How does any of this transfer lemaisa? Shavaron Lichtenstein once had a ha'ara, which is a very, very sharp ha'ara, and it undermines a whole lot, which is like this. Shavaron said, you have to sometimes distinguish, it's an article he wrote on tolerance, between what a person writes and what they believe, and what they do practically, He says, as an example of Soloveitchik, he thinks, was in his writing, was very firm, at times one-sided, but as a public figure, tended to be a bit more sort of open-minded, giving people their space. There were times where he spoke out very strongly, but often giving people a degree of space. Rav Kook, Rav Lichtenstein thinks, his impression is that for all of his openness, for all of his suggestions about finding Kedusha and things like that, practically, Rav Kook held the line so often. Practically, he held the line a lot. He was not accommodating as you would have thought or you would have expected practically based on his writings. The people that are very open-minded, but push comes to shove, you know, they end up being relatively conservative. And Rav Kook, what ends up happening in an unsurprising way, this is true for a bunch of thinkers. I'll give you an example of one. The Ishbitzer Rebbe, the Me'a Shiloach. The Me'a Shiloach is the Rebbe of Reb Tzadok, the Rebbe of all of Radziner Chassidus. The Radziner is the grandson of the Me'a Shiloach. Me'a Shiloach was a wildly open thinker about certain beliefs. Certain beliefs were very, very wild. Akhenei Kach, the Sefer Me'a Shiloach, was not printed, I believe, by a Jewish printing house. He couldn't find a firm printing house that would put out a Sefer. This is like in the late 1800s. Amongst those who learn his Torah, so the Ishbitzer himself, if you would just read his writings, you would expect like a very wild scene to be there. David Schaffer wrote an article about this a bunch of years ago. You would have expected a very wild scene. But it's not true. They were regular from Jews. But when you have a person that's very wild intellectually, but practically like very conservative, amongst those who latch onto their Torah, so some will be practically a bit more conservative. Some will be practically much, much more open. So people that were justifying, as an example, giving women smicha, one of the people was basing it on Torahs of the Ishbitzer. It's 1800s Poland. He lived a regular, classical life. But the Torah, sometimes, it's an intriguing sort of a question, why he didn't go to certain places and practically kept a certain kind of standard approach to Frumkeit. For Rav Kook, what you have amongst Talmidim of Rav Kook is a massive split between those that understand that Rav Kook was much, much more open, and what I said was unfair, even practically he was more open. He encouraged and saw certain things. Hebrew University, there were things that he saw and participated in where he was much more open. And there are those that say, no, Rav Kook, here's the opposite extreme, if you're holding in Eretz Yisrael, if any of you are, the scene of Har HaMor, which says even Rav Kook didn't really seek Kedusha in everything. So a pamphlet came out a year or two ago from Yeshivas Har HaMor that they argued that even like postmodernism, so Rav Kook could find Kedusha in communism, socialism, evolutionary theory, and a million things. Postmodernism, no. You know, like nothing there that's worthwhile or good. And what's interesting is when you have figures like Rav Kook, so is the Chasam Sofer's Mesorah, I think it's pretty clear how to apply, at least for many. Chasam Sofer is the guy who's into holding the line. Intellectually very creative, but holding the line. Holding the line, Mesorah is Mesorah. Rav Kook opened up the door. He opened the door, but he didn't run all the way through it. It wasn't like he was reform, Haskalah-based, and saying, let's throw out all Torah mitzvot, or at least many, and let's go from there. Rav Kook opened the door, but didn't walk all the way through, but the door was most certainly open. And for Rav Kook's thought, there is Kedusha everywhere. What does that mean practically? When am I holding a line, and when am I opening up? What am I actually, tachlis, going to be doing? So when you open the door a little bit, that's where things get very tricky. Some are going to essentially close the door a bit more. Some are going to open it a bit more. And many are going to claim that they're your true followers. Because, you know, what would he have said 60 years later? What would he have said about X? What would he have said about Y? Those are always going to be questions and discussions that are going to come up. So he tried to learn the sugya in a certain sense of Chadash Asar Min HaTorah from two perspectives, Chasam Sofer and Rav Kook, two very, very different perspectives that are going to inform the way that you look at things. There are obviously many, many more ways of looking at things, but I think these are two particular perspectives.